Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello!
Hello!
We can't be in the same room anymore.
No, we don't want to be rule breakers, do we?
No, absolutely not. And we, nor did we want to go and do it outdoors. The nights are drawing in. It'd be
have
no
to
fun,
light fire. No.
No, yeah. So here we are. You in your spare bedroom, me in the attic, all alone. Let me ask you a question. How good are you at remembering to take your mask out with you?
Oh, well, what I've had to do is make sure that I've got a stock of five, and I put one in each of my two coats, and then I put one in the buggy, and I put one in my backpack, and I put one in my raincoat, and then I just hope that I'm not taking anything different out for the day, because otherwise I keep forgetting.
That's what I need to do, because I do keep forgetting. I think the key to these things is having stuff that always lives in one place, which we've done a good job of, but it's a drawer in the kitchen, and that place really needs to be on a hook on the back of the front door.
Then
or do
leaving.
What you've done, where you just stash them in so many different places, it's pretty much impossible to leave the house without them.
The worst thing was on the very first day that it was introduced, where it was you had to wear a mask, I completely forgot, and I had to go into a newsagent's to top up electricity on my electricity key. And so what I did, and it was really embarrassing, I put a tissue over my mouth.
Even more embarrassing the fact that you're still using that electricity key.
I try to get it sorted out. It's more hassle than it's worth. I put a hanky, I put a tissue over my mouth.
Right, because I had this problem the other day. So I went out to go to the shops, got to the high street, realised I didn't have a mask with me and thought, oh, it's fine, I can just buy a new mask. But the trouble is, how do you go into a shop to buy a mask without a mask on?
Yeah, it's extremely difficult. They should have stalls, outdoor stalls selling them. That's the way around it.
Yes. But I sort of eventually managed to speak to the guy from outside the shop and he passed one through. But you know, so obviously you can spend a fortune on a mask. I think designers are making masks if you want to. So that's one end of the spectrum. And then most of us have got these washable cloth masks. But then there are also these disposable ones. Do you know the ones I mean?
Yeah.
You wear them once.
Yeah.
So I've quite often, like in this situation, found myself buying a disposable mask or a pack of disposable masks. This is what I never know the answer to. Does the blue bit go on the outside or the inside?
The blue bit? What bit's the blue bit? Oh, the cut. Oh, right.
The
outside, surely. Is it not? Does it not?
I don't know.
The bit with the layers. That goes on the outside, yeah.
But there are layers on the other side as well, aren't there?
Oh, right.
By their very nature, they're just folds.
I'm just trying to visualise other people, and I'm pretty sure that it's the blue on the outside.
I can never remember. I get these things, and then I'm staring at them, go, which way round is it? Is it blue on the outside or on the inside?
Maybe it doesn't matter. I don't know.
No. Well, so that was my little bit of mask awkwardness this week. Sort of thinking, how can I buy a mask without wearing a mask? It's a good question, isn't it?
Yeah, it's tricky.
I'll be honest, not a lot's happened to me this week. So I'm probably making more of that than it warrants, which I think will set the tone for the rest of the podcast. I went for a beard trim the other day.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which you're now allowed to do. It is odd when the barber's wearing like a welder's mask thing.
Oh, yeah. They're strange, those masks, aren't those welder's things? Do you think must feel quite nice, quite exciting, like a welder?
Yeah, I mean, I was a big fan of Flashdance.
Mm-hmm.
So for that reason alone, it's quite exciting to see somebody wearing one. But anyway, it's in there. You know, barbers sometimes have photographs, posters up of different haircuts.
Yes.
Showing photographs of every head he's had the pleasure to have known and all that. This particular barber I went to the other day, I'd never been to before, and he had got 5 posters up. So presumably these are the 5 most popular haircuts or the 5 that he's the most adept at. Do you want to know what they were?
Go on.
They were the 4 individual members of the band Blue.
Right.
And Gareth Gates.
And Gareth Gates. Was it when he had the kind of like the little sort of twists on top?
Yes. Yeah.
That was one of his cuts.
Yeah. Well, presumably. And then, you know, you could choose either the Gareth Gates or which member of Blue you look like. And I think, roughly speaking, that dates all these haircuts to the turn of the millennium.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Give or take. A few years here and there. And I wondered if that was this barber's speciality, turn of the millennium haircuts.
That era. I only do this era. It's like someone who just does kind of like, yeah. Like 50s, like quiffs and yeah. things. Yeah, yeah.
Or if it was customer-led, if those are the 5 most popular haircuts, and he thought, well, I'd better get 5 posters to illustrate them. But it just so happened it was the 4 members of Blue and Gareth Gates.
Maybe. It's possible, yeah. Yeah.
Again, I will, say again, not much has happened to me this week. I'm stretching for things to talk about. It was something weird that happened. We went to the park for a walk, Sarah and I. I'm walking down this path, and we can see that we are heading towards a bench. And I think we're both of a mind that we quite like a sit down, but we instantly see that we're not able to sit on this bench because it's covered in flowers and cards.
Right.
So somebody has died.
Yeah.
And presumably they either died on the bench or this was their favourite bench. Yeah. So their loved ones have decorated it.
Right.
In memory of this person.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is sweet.
Yeah.
As we're approaching, we can see that it's not just sort of flowers, cards, a photograph. There's also a large bag of what looks at first glance like it could be a big sack of dog food or perhaps fertilizer. You're getting the sort of bag I'm talking about.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
But then as we get close to it, it's protein powder.
Right.
So we're looking at this and thinking, wow, you know, this person, this recently bereaved person must have really, really loved protein powder.
Yeah.
Which instantly you then start building a picture in your mind of what sort of person they were. Maybe they were a real fitness fanatic and did a lot of exercise and then needed extra protein. And this was the thing that was known amongst all their friends. And they, you know, they thought it would be a nice thing to remember them in this way. And we're just sort of thinking about this, and we hadn't said it to each other at this point, but it later transpired that was what we were both thinking. As we're thinking this, somebody jogs up to the bench, somebody quite athletic, muscular, sporty, picks up the protein powder and then jogs off again.
Oh no, they just left it there.
Yeah, they just left it
there. No. Why would you leave it there?
I don't know. I mean, firstly, I think, you know, if a bench is covered in that stuff, you can't use it for any other purpose. It's just a shrine.
But right? He also knew that no one was going to steal it because they would think it was part of the shrine. So actually, it was quite clever.
But I also love that, how, you know, then when Sarah and I talked about it, we both had this thought, oh, they must have really loved protein powder. For a second did it occur to us that somebody had just left some protein powder on the bench.
Well, why would it? Who leaves protein powder around like that?
Yeah, you make a good point. All right, Annabelle, let's hear from some of these drifters. Stories of social incompetence. What have we got?
Okay, so first one's from Russ in Stourbridge. On the subject of things from the past that pop into your head every so often, just to renew that skin-crawling feeling of cringeworthy embarrassment, it happened about this time last year. My wife and I were shopping in Tesco's and I'd briefly left the trolley in her charge whilst I went to find something in a nearby aisle. When I returned, I found her looking at the Pax surface wipes. Now, I, being frugal, will check the price tags to see which pack is the best value for money. 2p per wipe, 5p per wipe, etc. I was fully engaged in checking these prices when my wife reaches over to grab an expensive brand leader. Without looking, I put my finger up to her lips and told her to slow her roll. I looked up into the startled face of a lady that looked strikingly similarly like my wife, but who was, crucially, not my wife. My wife was actually standing a few feet away with a bemused look on her face, watching this terrible and soul-crushing interaction with a total stranger. A mumbled apology and a pathetic attempt at explaining myself later, I awkwardly extracted myself from the scene. My wife frequently and joyfully reminds me of the time I hushed the lips of a stranger. So to that lady, again, I apologise, and I hope she doesn't feel the trauma like I do to this day.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yes, yes. This is from Brit, and she's referring to, did you see that story this week about the Spanish woman who pretended to be blind for years so she wouldn't have to interact with people?
Yes, a few people emailed that to me. I'm still off social media. I'm off Facebook and Twitter. I'm still hanging on in there with Instagram. But a couple of people texted me or emailed me about that.
Yeah. So she saw this and it reminded her of something that she said as a child that I still cringed about for years and remember to this day. When I was 6 years old, I began piano lessons. My teacher, Mr. Rogers, was blind and he used Braille for himself to read the music. At the end of one of my lessons, I mentioned that a girl in my class at the local school was also having piano lessons, but I didn't know who her teacher was. He asked her name and I said, Jennifer, but I don't know her other name, but she is always wearing a red jumper. He laughed and reminded me that he wouldn't know about the jumper. Even at 6 years old, I wanted the floor to swallow me up. I remember biting my finger with shame and embarrassment. I was very, very careful to never mention colours again. And then she goes on to say, remember when you were talking about the fear of vomiting, which I think she says is a emetophobia, or you said.
Yes,
anyway,
Sarah has it, yeah.
On the subject of this, she says, I went along to my local leisure centre today as my son took my four-year-old granddaughter swimming. I was viewing and my son was with her in the pool. All was going well until suddenly loud sirens went off and everyone was leaping out of the pool. I thought someone must have got into difficulty. It seemed something quite dramatic had taken place. It came to light that a three-year-old boy had just been sick in the water, and so this was the procedure. Can you imagine for anyone like Sarah or myself who has a vomit phobia?
Oh, God, yeah.
In the awful event of that happening anyway, to suddenly hear sirens going off and everyone leaping about everywhere is enough to give anyone a emetophobia. I didn't know this before, but the manageress stood nearby me, said they throw something into the water which crystallises it, and then they go along with the fishing nets to get it all out.
Wow.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? I want to get hold of some of this stuff that crystallises it. Not sure what I'd use it for, but... this last
party
story...
Party trick?
Yeah, party trick. Yes, exactly. All these parties I'm going to. And this last one's from Jake. And if you do have a emetophobia, this is not for you. Also, if you don't like anything in the toilet area of things, this is also not for you. In September 2007, my local under-12s football club had arranged a coach trip to watch England play Israel at Wembley. My dad was friends with the dad of one of the boys and had managed to get two spare tickets. I didn't play for this team and only knew one of the boys that did. I was 11 at the time and quite an introvert. My dad was working on the day, so my mum came along with me. We had a packed lunch, as we never had much money and the prices at the stadium were extortionate. This would tragically be the cause of my horrible accident. It was a roasting hot day in September, and a combination of sitting out in the sun for 90 minutes with no shade and consuming an entire multi-pack of cheese strings and three cartons of orange juice, not sure what mother was thinking, had made my tummy feel a bit funny. Consequently, on the return journey, I proceeded to projectile vomit all over the coach and, to my horror, soil my underpants. I must stress, this was not a case of a slight follow-through. I did a complete poo in my pants. I then had to sit in said poo-filled pants for the long journey.
I'm just laughing at, I'm such a child, I'm just laughing at the use of the word soiled my underpants, the phrase soil my underpants.
I then had to sit in my poo-filled pants for the long journey home. It was so bad that my mum had to tuck my socks into my jeans.
Oh.
Although everyone on the coach was aware I had vomited, my mother and I decided to keep the fact that I had pooed myself a secret. In turn, this caused the boy sitting behind me to continuously ask his dad, "Have you farted? It stinks." Safe to say, this was a good day had by all but me and my mum.
Oh, please send us your stories. It's hello@adriftpodcast.com. Annabelle, I'm ready for another way in which you are not a fully functioning adult.
Okay, so I was in Clevedon one day last week. Have you been to Clevedon before?
The country house?
No, it's in the West Country. It's a seaside town.
No, sorry, I thought you were saying Clevedon wrong. No, I've never been to Clevedon, no.
It wouldn't be the first time I said something wrong. In fact, I'm already nervous because I've got to say the word plaque quite a lot in this.
Right.
That's right, isn't it? Plaque, not
plaque. Well, you usually say plaque.
Exactly, yes. Anyway, so Clevedon, very nice, seaside town. There's a pier. It's no Southend Pier, which they put a train on because it's so long to make it easier to get down. Do you think it was at that point they thought, maybe we made it too long, the fact it needs public transport to get down it? I think Clevedon Pier burns down a lot less as well. But I've written to Southend Council several times with detailed sketches of how the pier legs could retract, sort of concertina down, so when it catches fire, you press a button and the pier just lowers into the sea and the fire is immediately extinguished. Still not done it. Weird. Anyway, Clevedon Pier is a lot shorter, and on the sides all the way down are little plaques with inscriptions like, "For Sid, he loved a nice sit down." You know, lots of memorial ones. I also saw a proposal that was something like, "Katie de Briggs, will you marry me? Love, Stu." And I thought that was great until I saw an older proposal that had clearly inspired Stu. I thought, oh, not so original now, are you, Stu? I also saw one that said, "Matt, I want to snog your face off. Love, Tanya." Which looks really quite strange on a brass plaque next to "For Barbara, who grew the very best roses and loved a cup of tea." I could have spent all day reading these. They were so nice. But I was with my 3-year-old son who was trying to get, and I was trying to get him to keep to the one-way system. So it was not easy. But it's a really lovely pier, Victorian, lots of original features. And at the end, like while in the past Southend Pier has had a pub, chip shop, a shell shop, and a bowling alley, this one has a pagoda. And at the top of the pagoda is a little cafe, and you get to it by stairs. And around the cafe is a viewing platform. And I can see, though, that because of COVID, the platform has been cordoned off because it's too narrow for social distancing. Now, as soon as my son sees the stairs, he wants to go up them. Like, stairs are exciting to him because we don't have stairs at home. And when we go to homes with them, he wants to go up them. I suppose it'd be a bit like if I went to a home with escalators or a lift. Like, I'd probably want to go just for the novelty of it. And there are some people around the stairs, but they're not making any moves to go up them. And somebody has just come down. So I go up with my son, confident in the knowledge that we're not pushing in or anything. This is the timetable of what happens at the pagoda. So my son takes ages going up the stairs. He's really slow because he's not great with stairs, but also because he's examined every rivet, every step, every speck of dust. At the top, he has a look at the cafe and then he has a brief tantrum as I won't buy him an ice cream. Not because I'm evil, but because he had one about half an hour ago. Then he's trying to climb under the cordon to get to the viewing platform. And I'm trying to stay calm and patient and not look like a bad parent because there's still quite a few people down below, if not more. Eventually, I manhandle him away and pretend I've seen some fish in the water. And then it's this very long journey back down the steps. When I get to the bottom, I see a sign I hadn't noticed before, which says, "Queue this way and then there's an arrow. But I'm not worried, as I'm sure I've not jumped a queue, as nobody seemed to be wanting to go up ahead of us. There are quite a lot of people there now, though, probably about 12. And come to think of it, it does look a lot like a queue. So I glance at the wall where the arrow pointed round the corner, and I see a terrible, terrible thing. I see an electronic screen, a dot matrix screen, and on it is a big red cross, which, while I'm looking at it, turns to a big green tick. And as it does, the people on the front go up the stairs. And there is clearly some COVID-safe one-in-one-out system that I have trampled over and then spent forever up there while buying nothing. Like, I must have gone up just before the green tick, completely pushed in. And I honestly think it was only my son who stopped me from running to the edge and throwing myself off into the freezing waters. But instead, I employed the port protocol. I was too mortified to even make eye contact. But what I'm going to do is buy a brass plaque with inscribed, sorry, didn't see the dot matrix board, hate myself, sorry.
So we've got a week to go till the Adrift live show.
Yes.
Do you want me to tell you my two concerns at the moment?
Yeah, I think you should.
This is setting aside the obvious concern of what will we do, which we'll address nearer the time.
Yeah.
So concern number one is because of the new COVID restrictions, you and I can't be in the same space together.
No.
Do you think that is a problem or isn't a problem?
I don't know, because I don't know what platform we're going to be doing it on. Like, and I also slightly concerned that neither of us have the greatest, for whatever reason, Wi-Fi.
Yes. Yeah. So this is my first concern. So I've been in communication with our friend Emma Corsham, who produces Reasons to be Cheerful.
Yeah.
And she does, I mean, she is like a very much sought after podcast producer and does all kinds of stuff. And she let me know that the thing to do is some kind of unlisted YouTube live stream using Zoom. This is her idea.
Okay.
But we're using Zoom tonight to record the podcast, and neither of us have got the video switched on to try and make it better. And I'm still struggling to hear you, and you keep turning into a robot, and then I keep losing you, and then you come back in like you're on fast forward search. So I'm slightly worried about the technology, because it's if we were both here, we'd just be dealing with my bad Wi-Fi. With you being there and me being here, we're dealing with your bad Wi-Fi and mine. But yeah, maybe we'll get around that. I just wanted to flag it.
Do you think it's any kind of special exemptions for live shows? Like, it's work, isn't it?
Yes, that is a good point.
Maybe so I could come around.
Sarah's still going out every night, or, you know, 4 or 5 nights a week and doing live comedy.
Right. Well, then.
So she's able to go and do live comedy. As long as we're not close to each other, then probably you can still come and do this.
I don't see why not. It's work, isn't it?
Yeah, because it just so happens that I live above the shop, or live below the shop,
yes,
in this case.
Yeah, I know I'm going to your house, but your house is your workplace.
Yes, okay.
I think there could
be
an exemption for this particular occasion.
Do we need to write to Sadiq Khan, or will we just assume there's an exemption?
I think, I think let's take the risk. I think it's okay. I'll just double check, but I think it's okay.
Okay, there's the first thing. All right, if anybody's listening to this and they think we've really misinterpreted the rules there,
then
let us know in advance. But okay, you can come here.
Okay, cool.
Okay, so secondly, it occurred to me that we proposed doing it on the same night as Bake Off.
Right, okay, and everyone watches Bake Off. Yeah,
well, do you not think there is probably quite a high crossover between people who like Adrift and people who would watch the Bake Off?
Yeah, but they can record it and watch it on another night, watch it on catch up.
All right, okay, then I'm not gonna over worry about that.
I think
it's one of the few shows that people do like to watch as it's happening, so that they don't find out who was voted off by accident from social media newspaper or something. But you think the Bake Off issue isn't an issue?
Let's not worry too much about that, unless, and once again, correct us if we're wrong on that one.
Okay, so that's what we're asking drifters for at this point. Do you think either it would be a terrible contravention of the rules for Annabelle to come here, given that you are allowed to go to a workplace, and this is a workplace, and the live show would be a work thing for our Patreon supporters? So that's the first question.
Yeah.
Or does the fact that I also live here, does that trump? Is the fact that it's my house, does that then invalidate the workplace thing?
Yeah. That's what we need to know.
That's number one.
Yeah.
And then number two is it a problem then that we're on at the same time, we'll be on at the same time as the Bake Off? And if it is, then we could always do it on a Wednesday or something, right?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll wait to hear back on that. Okay. And if you do have a strong feeling on either of those two things, please email us hello@adriftpodcast.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Once again, so little has happened to me this last week that I find myself in the position that all I've really got to talk about is what I've watched on TV.
But that's always good to hear, so tell us.
I tell you what we rewatched last night was The Social Network.
Oh, I've not seen that since it was first out.
Yeah, I think I maybe saw it once after I saw it at the cinema, but it's not. I know I'm a big rewatcher of stuff, and I know you're not a big rewatcher at all, really.
No.
But our rationale for choosing it was we narrowed it down to two. We wanted something that felt easy and cozy, and we'd narrowed it down to La La Land.
Oh, yeah.
And The Social Network. And do you want to know why we chose The Social Network?
Go on.
Because it's set in Harvard, you know, in the Boston area, and it felt more autumnal.
So more appropriate.
Yeah. On a October night, you want something that feels autumnal rather than something that feels sunny, I think.
You want to see people in roll neck jumpers.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. I was certainly glad to watch it again. One weird thing towards the end is, you know, at the end of a film which is based on real events, it comes up with where they are now or what's happening now and that kind of stuff.
Mm.
With The Social Network, it was something like Facebook is now valued at $25 billion. Mark Zuckerberg is now the world's youngest billionaire. And I just thought it's so funny thinking about that. When that film came out, it came out because Facebook at that point was ubiquitous and it was this huge thing.
Mm-mm.
And the point it was making was like, look how big it is now at the end of the film. It's worth $25 billion and now he's a billionaire. And now we're at a point where it's worth closer to a trillion.
Mm.
And he is like this multi billionaire. And I thought that was sort of funny. That what seemed like an obscene valuation and an obscene level of wealth for him at the point that film came out feels modest compared to where it is now.
Yeah.
I also wondered if how much do you remember about it?
It was a long time ago, probably not very much.
Yeah. So you probably remember that he's been sued by these twins who are both played by the same guy who say that it was their idea.
Yeah.
But also running concurrently with that, there's a lawsuit from his best friend who he grew it with, who was then forced out as it started to gain momentum and get investment. A guy called Eduardo, who was played by Andrew Garfield in the film. Does that ring a bell?
Yeah.
And he just seemed like, you know, Mark Zuckerberg seems cold and weird in all the ways that you stereotypically think of him as being. But the other guy, he's the heart of the film. He's the good guy who was screwed over and forced out.
Mm.
And I wondered, so that guy... they ended up settling with him, and that guy has got now got an estimated worth of like $14 billion or dollars or whatever. And I wondered if that guy ever bunged Andrew Garfield any money for portraying him so sympathetically.
Make me nicer.
Yeah, because he must be the guy who, whenever anybody meets him, and if they know the name or if he starts to talk his, about his life, they would say, oh, you were the nice one in The Social Network.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe they gave some money to the writers as well.
Yeah, to Aaron Sorkin. So that we rewatched that. I also watched a fantastic documentary. You've heard me talk about a Swedish filmmaker called Roy Andersson, who is one of my favourites. He does these films which are unlike anything else. They don't have a narrative structure across the film. They are like a series of sketches over the course of an hour and a half, but more like vignettes about life. And they're all done on a locked off camera, so it's a single shot. And the world he creates is simultaneously sort of hyper real, but weirdly coloured at the same time, you know, in a way quite drab, but some of the colours quite vivid. And there's a real dark humour to what he does. And it's real stuff of life, and I love him. He's one of my favourite filmmakers. Like I said, this film, You, the Living, is one of my favourites. And then he got a lot of success with his last film, which is called A Pigeon on a Branch.
Oh, yeah.
Reflecting on Exit. You remember me talking about
that.
Yeah, So I've been waiting forever for his new film to come out, which is called About Endlessness. And it's been delayed and delayed and delayed because of COVID. I think it's finally coming out in November. But in the meantime, a documentary has been made and released about this filmmaker, which is called Being a Human Person. And it's in the cinemas now. And I know not many people are going to cinemas, but also you can watch it on something called Curzon Home Cinema, which is a chain of art house cinemas here in the UK. And you can watch some of their stuff online. And I rented it on Saturday night and loved it so much that I then watched it the following night again with Sarah.
Really?
Yeah. Like this guy has just done it his own way, and it's just really remarkable how meticulous he bought this rundown townhouse in Stockholm in 1981 for what I'm guessing would have been a small amount of money, and because of that he was able to build a studio in there, and he's been able to do all these films his own way. And if you know the films, and you know, I'm not sure that a lot of people will know, there's sort of films that people who know them love them, but they're not things that have mass audiences. But if you know them and love them, the idea that these things are done in a studio is mind-blowing. But he creates hyper real looking sets and uses tricks of photography and tricks of cinema, and there's stuff about how he does that which is just fascinating, and the teams he's worked with forever and the level of artistry and craftsmanship that goes into these films. But you also get to know about him as a person and about how his, just where he's at in his life and how that has affected this current film. And it's so brilliant, and I really want people to watch it. And like, Sarah doesn't really know his films. I think I've tried to get her to sit through a couple and she's fallen asleep, but she really loved this documentary. It's okay. Ever so good. So there's that. And then the other thing we watched was this new David Attenborough documentary that he's done on Netflix, which is it called Life on Our Planet or just Our Planet? And it's him reflecting on his career and about how much the Earth has changed and about the threat of climate change and global heating and the what's been done to biodiversity on the planet. And it's really moving seeing him as a young man, and it's great seeing all this footage he's shot over the years. It's also terrifying the pace at which this has happened, this climate emergency we find ourselves in has happened. And it's got an optimistic ending where he sets out the case for what can be done, which can feel overwhelming, but his argument is basically, if we give the world more of the world back to nature, then that in itself will fix a lot of this and we'll benefit from it as well, which is a great argument to make. But it just made me think about how really I think a lot of people's attitude towards climate change is they now think it's real and think it's worrying, but they don't really want to go to the effort of giving it back to nature. They just think, oh, somebody's, I've just got this feeling that if we wait, somebody will there'll be enough panic that somebody will have an idea how we can carry on destroying nature, but just having it our way anyway. Do you not feel that that's how a lot of people think about climate change? Somebody will just come up with an idea so we can carry on doing exactly what we have been doing.
Yeah. It's not really me. It's these big factories. That's nothing to do with me.
Yeah, and this, you know, the amount of agency you have compared to a factory is there's definitely something in that, and there needs to be all this change at government level, and the personal change can seem negligible as a result of that. But I think it's not that most people think, oh, can't we go back to having this beautiful planet where more than half of it is wilderness? It's people think, like, what is the least we can do?
Mm-hmm.
To carry on living like we are doing, but without all frying in two generations' time.
Yeah.
Although I'll be honest, like when he talked about the sea levels rising, I do sometimes think that's not a bad thing. Like I've been to the British seaside. Sometimes you have to walk a long way out to get to the actual sea when the tide is out.
You know, it comes in again, though.
I know, but I could just do with it not going quite so far out if the sea levels were rising. It'd help with that problem. Quandary Corner here in Problematic. Annabelle, you got the first one.
We're a bit
for
low
us.
On these, so if you do have one, please do email it in to us. Mm. Jack says, I regularly walk my dog, a beautiful staffy named Beau, in some woods near my house. These woods are quite large, and I'm often in areas with nobody around at all. My question is this: when I'm in these areas with nobody else around and a lone woman appears, am I supposed to completely ignore her as my attention will make her uneasy, or say hello to be friendly, even though this might make her nervous? I never know what to do, as I'd hate to think that I make any lone woman uncomfortable. Mm. Please help.
It's a difficult one. I mean, I would suggest a sort of half smile, but I've been told by numerous people, including you and my wife, that my smile is kind of creepy. So what I think is conveying warmth and friendliness can often come over as creepy. And I don't know your face. I mean, I don't know that this is the same for you, but I would... You need an interaction that shows you are an unthreatening figure.
Yes.
I mean, could you say from a distance, say, I'm so sorry, you wouldn't know what time it is, would you? My phone is flat.
No.
And then she tells you the time.
No.
And then that's it. You never have to interact again, but she knows that you're, you know, you're not one of the bad ones.
No, that doesn't work for me because, as I've said before, if someone asks me the time, I always think they're trying to steal my phone.
Of course, yeah, okay.
I think that you have to go one way or the other. There can't be any kind of middle ground. You either have to completely ignore them, or just be really really confidently, hello, hi, like that. Or another option, you could pretend to be on the phone in a very non-threatening, like just to your mum way or something, something very sort of comforting, nice, talking about cakes or animals or
knitting,
yeah. These kind of things. Yeah. Pretend you're talking to your grandma.
Yes.
Hello, Nana, yes, how are you?
That's a great idea.
And then how can you feel threatened by that? And then you don't have to have any interaction and you're totally unthreatening.
Yeah, that's perfect, Annabelle. It's perfect.
Okay,
I had one more suggestion, but I don't think it's as good as yours, so I wonder if we should just leave it.
I'm interested, though. It might help other people who don't want to do the phone to Nan thing.
It's a choice of two things. You either say, hot enough for you, or cold enough for you.
No, okay, forget the Nan thing, it's that one. Okay, and this one's from Emily. She says, my boyfriend and I have recently become what I describe as mostly vegan. We won't buy or eat eggs, dairy, meat or fish, but every now and then, if someone offers me a piece of cake, I'll have it because I really, really like cake. And I figure I didn't buy it or make it, so I played no part in its existence, so I might as well eat it. My boyfriend is the same, although a bit less interested in cake than me. We recently had dinner at my friend Claire's house. I'd let her know I was vegan with some reluctance as they are carnivores, so I knew she'd stress out about knowing what to cook. As it was, she made an amazing meal, which she'd clearly put a lot of thought into. When it came to dessert, my boyfriend and I were given some fruit, whereas Claire and her husband had a lemon tart. On seeing this, my boyfriend said, oh, actually, I'll just have some of that too, please. Which horrified me because they'd gone to so much trouble to meet our dietary requirements with the main course. They gave it to him and he ate it while I sat with my pineapple and melon feeling very jealous. But I felt I couldn't eat the tart and he shouldn't have. Who was in the right?
Oh, you're absolutely in the right.
So that the boyfriend should never, ever have tried the lemon tart, even though he really wanted it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you are, because I'm vegetarian, which is, in a way, in a lot of ways it's easier, but specifically, it's not like people serve a meaty dessert and I think, oh, I'll have a bit of that, though. That's fine. Mm. But you are sort of like a mostly vegan person.
Yeah, I'm
so
the same,
to
really.
Talk to me about how what you think of this.
Well, in my opinion, is you can't have the dessert. And you can go home and eat that dessert in private. Yeah. But because your friend has gone to so much trouble to make a meal that suits you, you can't then suddenly say, oh, actually, I will have a bit of egg and dairy. Because otherwise, it's like, why didn't...
No.
You could have a bit of egg and dairy for your main thing, can't you? And I wouldn't have had to go to so much trouble because I don't know how to cook this particular type of food. So I think Emily's boyfriend is completely in the wrong.
Yeah, I think so too.
But maybe Claire should have given them something better than fruit. I don't know.
I always feel cheated as a veggie if I get a less good dessert on an aeroplane than other people.
Yes. There's an assumption that because you're vegetarian or vegan, that means you're healthy. No.
Yes.
I'm not healthy. I still want to eat nice things.
Yep.
Just without dairy in them, yeah.
I don't see... I'm not saying having your own rules about what you do and don't. Everybody's got to do what they can. I'm probably like 60% vegan and I've got my own ways of justifying. Somebody said to me the other day, this made me laugh, I was moaning about the fact that I've been vegetarian for all these years and now the vegans have got the moral high ground. and he said, like, the vegetarians are like the Lib Dems.
Yeah, that's great.
That was funny.
Yeah.
These days, we just shrunk in relevance, and we were so used to occupying the moral high ground for all this time. Like, by all means, have your own rules and do what you can, and but you've just got to be clear with other people. You can't expect other people to understand that those kind of nebulous ideas about what you will and won't eat.
Yeah. So we're all on Emily's side then. Okay, good.
Yeah. And we do, you say we do need some more quandaries.
Yes, please. Yeah, more of these, please. It's looking a bit low at the moment, so we do need some more.
And that was this week's podcast. Thank you for listening. I think it was slightly ropey this week. I think a combination of the Zoom technology and not working that well with our Wi-Fi connections, not being in the same room, me being in a grumpy mood. None of this, I think, has made for a vintage episode, so apologies for that. But thank you for your ears. Thanks also to Man and the Echo for the backing music and to Emily Harrison for the incidental music. Carla Gowlett took the photos, Kim Rainey designed the artwork, and I'll finish this week by saying, shh, slow your roll. Podication time. This comes from Imperial Mistress Rebecca, who says, greetings, Annabelle and Jeff.
Greetings.
Greetings.
I am writing in to ask for a podication. Just over a year ago, a wee munchkin named Fifi bounced into our life. She was a malnourished, pregnant stray cat that we saw at our local cat's protection shelter. She has settled in so well with us, and she really cheers us up with her shenanigans. I would like to podicate this to Fifi for being so funny and loving. All the best wishes, Imperial Mistress Rebecca. Let me tell you something. I feel that I one of my superpowers, maybe my only superpower, is coaxing a dog. Like, I think generally a dog will come to me.
Okay, yeah, good. That's nice. That's a good one.
Well, I was hoping you'd say, yes, I've noticed that about you. Dogs to love you.
No, dogs. Well, I know that my dog loves you, but I don't think I've seen you with enough dogs to make this kind of judgment.
You've seen me with a lot of dogs over the years. This is a weird thing.
Sorry. I'm going to let you down here.
I've got quite poor self-esteem anyway. I've not been doing great at the moment. And one of the things I cling on to is, well, dogs seem to really like me. And you've made me feel like I'm delusional now.
You're very good with babies as well.
I'm fine with babies. But
you think you're better with dogs.
Okay. I think I'm really coming to my own with dogs. Anyway, the point being, if I'm near a dog, I think I very easily win over the dog's trust and it will come to me and, you know, and I'll end up sort of bonding with the dog. I have no such ability with a cat. Often a cat will come into our back garden or front garden and I'll try and coax it in and they always run a mile from me.
Nobody has an affinity with a cat. If they say they have, they're lying. Nobody has. And unless you're their owner.
But do you not think some people can do like a pss, 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 and a cat will come to them?
Yeah, I've seen
that.
I
can just always get a dog to come to me, but I can seldom... You know, I think, but maybe that's the thing with a cat, isn't it? Everything has to be on its own terms.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Maybe there's a course you can go on.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, that's not a bad idea. I've been writing down courses I could go on, so I'll add that to the list.
Okay.
Anyway, if you want me to practice on Fifi, Rebecca,
yeah.
Be only too pleased to do so. Anyway, there we go. The latest edition of the podcast, podicated to Fifi. And if you'd like a podication, email us hello@adriftpodcast.com.
Great. Stop.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.